This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Carolyn Heldman. Coming up on today's show, Gorsuch House. It's a proposed 60-plus room lodge at the base of Lift 1A on Aspen Mountain. My guests, Jeff Gorsuch, Brian Peterson, and also Aspen native Tom Moore are here to talk about the project. And later, from the Aspen Valley Ski and Snowboard Club Nordic Team, Susan Munchen, she's the events director, and the Nordic Team coach, August Teague, on their bonfire that's happening this Saturday night.
Gorsuch House is an optimistic look at a wonderful part of our community that is so vital and so important to so many. And Gorsuch House came out of Brian and sort of my vision of looking at South Aspen Street and of this sacred spot and offering some really creative ideas around hospitality, around connectivity, around a new lift, and mostly about a public hotel, the restaurant and bar and vitality, and waking up the memory to people that don't recall this part of our village and the community and town being a vibrant place because it's been dormant for so long.
I think it's important right now to give some context of what it used to be. That's where skiing was born, and maybe Tom, I'm sure all of you could speak to that.
Well, I grew up like 2.5 blocks from there. We skied every day. I got on the Aspen Junior Ski Team, and we skied out of there 2.5 days a week. And it was a very, very crowded place at that point in time because there was only one way up the mountain, you know, and it was a single chair. And so the lift lines would actually go from where the old base chairlift bull wheel is all the way up to Gorsuch House. You'd stand in line that long just to get up the mountain. And when you'd come back down, that was the only way back down. Spar Gulch really wasn't skiable in those days. That side of the mountain wasn't skiable at all.
So that side was 1A. And mm-hmm. Roach's Run coming, was it called Roach's Run at the very beginning?
Yes.
Did it go to the same spot that the terminus is today?
That would be at the top of FIS, Lift 1. And so it didn't go up as high as it did now, but Lift 1 and 2 were right on that knob. The second lift went on up to the sun deck. And you could ski some of that area up there, but if you got down too far, you'd have to fight your way down through Spar Gulch and down a little now.
Well, the names of the runs, too, FIS, Roaches, they have this historical meaning of World Cup races.
Oh, yeah.
On that side of the mountain, was the hospitality part or the food and beverage part limited to the skier chalet, or was there something else there?
Just the skier chalet when I was in high school and junior high. The roads were good enough you could ski to the Red Onion.
Oh.
And you could ski to the Hotel Jerome.
So
that's where they would go. But then Howard Orry came along. He was great to the Aspen Junior Ski Team. He would, like, feed us in front of anybody. and we'd get two hamburgers or milkshake for 50 cents at lunch on the weekends, yeah.
Early on, Tom, 1A, I think at the very beginning, 1A was the only place,
it was just
right?
Lift 1.
Okay. Yeah. Then things really changed when Little Nell started to happen, and then really changed when the Little Nell Hotel went in. Is that when everything really, like the gravitational pull to that side of the mountain started to happen?
What happened is they finally got rid of the original T-bar, and they put a lift up to the bottom of Silver Queen, and then you could ski down, and they popped the lift in. That was called Number 5 Lift, which they call
the Bell Chair.
Bell Mountain.
Yeah.
Bell Mountain Chair.
Yeah. And so that got us up to that side of the mountain. And that's when Lift 1 started in decline. There were double chair lifts and not single. You could get to the top of the mountain way quicker than you could on the old Lift 1 and 2. Yeah, the old T-bar, which was a really cool structure. I don't know if you've ever seen pictures of it. It went just to the second knoll on Little Nell. The cables would break on it quite often, and they would just piece them together at night and, you know, on the T-bars themselves. And so when we would ride up there, lots of times we were in the air, Yeah, because the cable wasn't long enough.
Wow.
And we weren't tall enough.
Did you hold on with your hands rather than?
No, we'd just stay on it
and it would lift
spin
you.
Around until you got to the top.
That's so funny.
Yeah, that's
and
what we did.
During that time, when Skiing Company was owned by several different folks. And fast forward to today.
I think Tom's historical context brings us, you know, front and center and focuses on being forward-looking. The past has brought us to where we are. My folks skied with Tom in the 50s, and I brought pictures of the Roach Cup medals that my mom and dad, you know, won in the 50s. There were great people like Gail Spence that was the volunteer coach and was a local legend and hero from Aspen, a skier, ski racer here. And Tom talked about the Harriman Cup, the Roach Cup. There were great, you know, people like Dick Durrance and Miggs. And Brian and I sort of talked about those early ski pioneers that invented or created modern Aspen. The magic of the mountain, Ajax, Aspen Mountain, that's Aspen's Matterhorn. The mountain and the magic of the mountain is what created the vibrancy for people to want to be here after World War II into the 50s, out of the quiet years. And so when you look at, I showed you the photo montage and sort of this landscape of this Herbert Beyer montage that was done in the 50s. And in it, it says, I mean, you know, the world's longest ski lift, the center for not only the 50 FIS gathering that took place here for the world championships, and the storied past that, you know, all these great pioneers, you know, Walter Pepke, Fred Islin, Friedel Pfeiffer, they helped to create a vibe in an attraction where the world came to Aspen for winter sport. And I think that that's sort of the story that I was engaged in as a young person. My mom and dad came here as competitors. And then you have this history of skiing at this area.
Okay, this begs the question. The world still does come to Aspen.
I would also say it doesn't belong to Aspen. This is a story that belongs to this community of skiing. The ski club cut the original trails there. Andre Roach, Frank Willoughby, many others. I don't want to leave anybody out. So the ski club was the center of activity, and it was the vitality, and it was part of the real exuberance of the culture of this town.
So tell me about the notion or the vision of putting a big hotel at the base there. How is that going to change?
Well, I mean, it's not a mega hotel. I think big hotels, you talk about maybe the Little Nell's a pretty big hotel. The St. Regis is a big hotel. The Jerome is a bigger hotel. Aspen does not have a lot of huge hotels. We've lost a lot of small hotels.
What's the scope in relation to those that you just mentioned?
Like the Limelight is about 110,000 square feet above grade. That's about 25,000 square feet bigger than the Little Nell is. The Jerome is in between the Little Nell and the Limelight in terms of size.
So where's Gorsuch House fit?
So we're like 20% smaller than the Little Nell. We're around 68,000 to 70,000 square feet right now.
How many beds?
Grade. 81 hot beds or total beds, plus a few free market units. I think we're the smallest hotel by 20% to ask to exist in the last 40 years.
This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. My guests today are the Gorsuch House partners and longtime local and native Tom Moore. Jeff Gorsuch and Brian Peterson had the original vision for a new project at Lift 1A. They formed Roach Partners and entered into an agreement to acquire the land from the Aspen Skiing Company. For the past 2 years, they've worked with a group of professional land planners, architects, and designers, as well as Aspen Skiing Company planners, to move the vision forward. Tom Moore is a native Aspenite and member of the Aspen Hall of Fame. The Gorsuch House developers face a second reading at a public hearing on February 13th. When you look up at the mountain, do you think that, I understand that some of the complaints, or some of the pushback anyway, is that if you look up at the mountain, what you'll now see, because of the slope and the way you have to build it, yeah, it's going to look pretty imposing, right?
You know, it's change,
right.
and then you add that it's on a sloping site to that change, and it looks bigger. Like, for example, if you look at the Shadow Mountain condominiums on the right side at the top, from the very bottom to the very top of that project, there's only 21 units, but it's 80 feet.
And your height?
Our height averages, it's about
36 feet?
I think we lowered it to, I think it's 34 and a half or 35 feet average height.
This isn't a variance request, is it? Or is it?
No, we've basically taken the philosophy. We've learned a lot, by the way. We've listened a lot. And we sort of came at this inside out. We came and we had a lot of ideas that were, we didn't want to have any variances. We wanted to have all of our requirements met, our housing on site. And we tried to do that, but the structure was too big and it took up too much of the landscape. It's 6 acres, the actual parcel of the ski companies, and we're building on a little less than 1 acre. And so it was basically the complexity of the lift placement with getting the right program and the size that was going to open up the skiway and allow for there to be a right-sized hotel that was going to fit into the mass, the scale, the characteristics of the neighborhood. And so, you know, we've basically gone through the P&Z and then through our first reading with the town council, and now are looking at a meeting on the 13th of February where there's going to be public input, and then we're going to really get into the leadership discussion with council about, you know, what are the thresholds? What does the leadership see? And our vision was that there ought to be at the base, the historic portal, a center, a place to gather at the base of the mountain for the public, for the community. So our house is your house. And that meant, you know, hot beds, restaurant, breakfast, lunch, dinner, lockers, patrol headquarters, ticketing, restrooms, all those type of facilities that you don't recognize and see there anymore. It just doesn't exist.
Is public parking gone?
Actually, as a requirement for Lift One Lodge below us to move out into the right-of-way and take all those parking spaces, they're required to actually take those 50 spaces and rebuild them in their parking structure. So those public spaces are still there. They're just within their parking structure. You know, when basically 8:30 till, who knows, 11 in the morning when it's busy in the wintertime for skiing, you know, we've been discussing, you know, every 8 minutes you can basically catch a shuttle anywhere on that loop from north of Nell or the Gondola Plaza, West End, Ruby Park, St. Regis.
Important to point out the complexities over time that have occurred with, first of all, the lift moving up, and secondly, there's real estate that's been very coveted and then it's been, you know, invested in and improved on for the entitlements. And so those entitlements exist, are going to be built on, and then there are things that have happened. Brian mentioned some of the conveyances that occurred with regards to the historic ski return, and also with some of the Delensic parcels, which is now, you know, in a life estate, and Aspen Valley Land Trust owns that. So you have in the day the lift moving up, you know, and that was a directive by the ski company at the time with Darcy Brown. And so that occurred, and now what we're trying to do today is create vitality and animation and, you know, make a place for the public to be at the bottom of that mountain. And to exist, I mean, for skiing, for activity, for meals, for meeting, for events, opera, and then also this connection between the story and the legacy of skiing on some of the best coveted runs. It's a classic venue. It's like Kitzbühel. It's like Wengen. It's like Garmisch. You know what I mean? Our World Cup finishes in a village. There are athletes that just, I mean, over the generations that love this town, and it would be just so. Such a shame to lose that connectivity with that part of our history.
Tell me what happens on Norway when you're skiing down Norway.
Norway, we've had a lot of discussions about how Norway will ski. The natural fall line as you get towards the bottom, 20% of it, tilts to the right and funnels everybody into those. You know, there's a couple big rocks or boulders down there that you ski around, and everybody kind of ends up in that right 50 to even 30%. And cruises back onto the groomed terrain and ski above the lift clearance. So you cruise back around and back under the lift and back to the lift maze.
This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. My guests today are the Gorsuch House partners and longtime local and native Tom Moore. Jeff Gorsuch and Brian Peterson had the original vision for a new project at Lift 1A. They formed Roach Partners and entered into an agreement to acquire the land from the Aspen Skiing Company. For the past 2 years, they've worked with a group of professional land planners, architects, and designers, as well as Aspen Skiing Company planners, to move the vision forward. Tom Moore is a native Aspenite and member of the Aspen Hall of Fame. the Gorsuch House developers face a second reading at a public hearing on February 13th. The parcel you bought from the ski company?
We have an option on a parcel of ground that we, you know, negotiated in a contract with the ski company. So it's their land, and we have the right to seek the entitlements, which is what we're doing.
Okay.
On their land.
So you don't own the land underneath.
We have the contract with the option to buy the land, and when we get our preliminary approvals, then we will close on that.
Okay.
And then when that occurs, this is a very important point, is that the lift is tied to the expectation.
That's what I was going to ask.
That there will be infrastructure and hotbeds and a hotel that will occur there. And so
right.
The lift doesn't just exist. It serves so few of the original scans and the visitors that come to Aspen Mountain. And so this is the point that there will be a new lift with the approval of a hotel and infrastructure that supports a growing, you know, hospitality center with transportation up the mountain there. A new lift occurs with a new hotel. And
not without? Is that that's the implication?
That would have to be a question that you would have to ask directly to Mike. One goes with the other. I mean, the connectivity and the improvements with the infrastructure, that's what's going to be the result and be the successful outcome.
Okay.
With a right-sized ski area base. And it's important for people to know that the Little Nell was conservation-based when it was before there was a hotel there. This is a conservation zone, yet it's always been, for the last 80 years, a base of skiing at the bottom of the mountain, which is sort of the magic magnet that brings everybody to Aspen.
It was negotiated as part of the purchase price, so we're paying for the
funding
cost.
Norway Partners.
Yeah.
You've already been in front of P&Z, and it was a unanimous decision to not approve. Why do you think that happened?
I think it's about trust. You know, I think there's a real burn and there's a anxiety and there's an angst that exists in our community around the notion of change. I've had the privilege to be part of a business that's had reoccurring revenue and the opportunity to do business here for nearly 50 years. So this is a privilege. I've also had the privilege to have my kids in the school system and to grow up here. And so to me, I'm an optimist. I think Aspen's best, most defining days are ahead of us. Are we all collectively being responsible for taking that Aspen idea forward? We're a ski town, and the world comes to Aspen to ski. This occurs in all ski resorts and villages all across the world. Infrastructure, change, improvement, connectivity, lifts, lodging. And so these are not difficult things. It's just we need to get together. And the struggle that happened at P&Z is that getting people informed and then having people feel comfortable taking a leadership position. And I think we were close with several people on the P&Z, and there was that, like, yeah, it's almost there. You're not quite there.
Jeff, what were specific complaints that they had?
You know what? There were some specific complaints that they were concerned that we had not been community-minded in dealing with some of our neighbors. And about lift placement and about size and mass and scale. And I think that sometimes people in positions of responsibility, they have to also get together and feel comfortable, you know, being at the front of the leadership pack. And I think that there were glimpses of people that were ready to do that, but they felt more comfortable, I think, pushing it to council and then letting it go to a wider discussion. And with comment from the public and then with input from, you know, the city council and the staff.
You've been in front of city council already, yes?
Yes.
They
actually voted unanimously. Art had to recuse himself.
Okay.
They voted 4-0 to allow for the second reading,
okay,
which is the 13th. And that will be available for public comment and further, you know, dialogue and discussion with Jennifer in the planning department.
You know, we've heard a lot of comments that any development after the art museum is suffering from the approval and building of the art museum. We've heard that from so many people, including some of the people on P&Z. Like,
I mean, P&Z had a massive review process. It's a big project. It's a defining project, and so they took a very detailed look, as did the staff and all the city planning department. And so, you know, they're doing their job and they're working on behalf of the public. And I think that it's an important enough project, and we can do better collectively as a community and come up with a way to have a new lift, a great product that's available at the base of the mountain with hotbeds and the services that so desperately need to be there and to serve the whole community.
This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. My guests today are the Gorsuch House Partners and longtime local and native Tom Moore. Jeff Gorsuch and Brian Peterson had the original vision for a new project at Lift 1A. They formed Roach Partners and entered into an agreement to acquire the land from the Aspen Skiing Company. For the past 2 years, they've worked with a group of professional land planners, architects, and designers, as well as Aspen Skiing Company planners, to move the vision forward. Tom Moore is a native Aspenite and member of the Aspen Hall of Fame. The Gorsuch House developers face a second reading at a public hearing on February 13th. Do you all think you're being treated differently because of the historical connections you have with the community?
I don't think so. I think that's just been sort of played up. I think that this community's wide awake, you know? I think that you get one chance to make an impression, and you can't come up and, you know, sucker punch Aspen. You are who you are. I mean, we're a good group. We're like fathers and skiers and people that own businesses here, and I mean, it's an honor to get to come with a big idea, and it's just an idea right now. I mean, we're talking about an application that's an idea for Aspen to do better than we're doing, and that's positive. So we've had a great time. We've learned a lot, and we're going to keep listening, but we're sitting here with one of the gracious men of Aspen that's done more for this community than anybody I know, with our education system, with the ski club, with all the things that happen at the public school. And so Tom Moore put a historical focus on this. This is about Aspen going forward. And if you look back and where we've been, I mean, we got to do better than no water and no toilets at the bottom of Lift 1A, and no hospitality.
Does this feel a little like you ran for office? Do you feel like, oh, my God, what?
I never thought I'd be in the papers so much. You know, I don't really feel like I don't want to be hung at the edge of town. But, I mean, I feel like big ideas take optimistic people. And this is a great idea, and it's going to get done. I believe in this community.
But it's a business, too.
Business is reality. There has to be an exchange. There has to be a give and a take. And so, like Brian said, we're the smallest hotel that's applied to be approved in decades. And this community will make its determination. I have no regrets. I wouldn't have done anything differently. They're trying to decide in Jackson if they're going to put a new gondola on Snow King. It's equally as legendary and great a mountain, you know what I mean? And it's a historic mountain in a historic great town. And so, you know, we're not the only community that's looking at these types of issues.
I've been here my whole life. I've watched change, a lot of it for good, a lot of it not so good. But you know something, I've gotten used to it. And when you get something good, I'm pretty happy about that. And, you know, things like Base 2 and Base 1, not because my building's across the street from Base 2, but sometimes those sour people on, especially the taxpaying public, on what is really appropriate and what is not appropriate for our town. And that kind of irritates me so much that the people that have never ever put anything into this town are the ones that are sitting in City Hall and directing everybody's lives. And that, you know, of course, my father hated that, and I don't hate it. I understand it, but it does put up a brick wall way too many more times than it has to.
You know, I also feel a lot of gratitude, and I'm thankful for the people that have reviewed it, that have looked at it. You know, the leadership, the planners, the P&Z, the people that also love the community. But it's going to boil down to trust, and it's going to boil down to, you know, asking ourselves tough questions. You know, can Aspen be a forward-looking community? Are we going to be open-minded that we have an obligation to all uphold that part? You just don't get to be in Aspen. It's just, you know, Aspen doesn't owe anybody anything. It's just not something that you're entitled to. you earn your place here, and you better find a way to contribute. And so we're out there with a vision, with a dream, with an invitation to the community in a humble way, saying, you know what, we believe that we have something very important that we're focused on that can be a legacy going forward. And we want to do it and do it right. But generationally, I almost feel a responsibility and an obligation. This is not just something that we're doing. It's sort of who we are.
Jeff Gorsuch, Brian Peterson, Tom Moore, thank you all for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up next on Cross Currents, Susan Munchen and August Teague from the Aspen Valley Ski and Snowboard Club about their bonfire dinner that's a benefit for the AVSC Nordic program. It's coming up this Saturday night.
This is the largest single fundraiser for the AVSC Nordic program, and we do one a year.
And you get restaurants to come out.
The restaurant support for this event is amazing. Just a few restaurants that come out are the Butcher's Block, Pan and Fork, Element 47 over at the Little Nell, the Stew Pot, Slow Groovin' is coming this year, AZ, the Elks Club, Shlomo's also new this year, Mezzaluna, and the Big Wrap, and many more. The event's from 6 to 8, and some people even show up early to get their equipment. There's a nice flow around the course. It's a 1.5K course with four different stations with bonfires and different food and beverages at each station, starting with drinks and then appetizers, soups and breads, and then, of course, finishing with sweets and coffee and hot chocolate.
Music, too? Who plays?
Oh, well, we have our very own Nordic Bonfire Band that plays at Station 1, and they are super fun and perfect for the event. Just an old-fashioned bonfire acoustic band that includes Mark Patterson of Paradise Bakery.
And August, is your team out there kind of assisting or...
They are. You know, you don't have to have equipment. You can pick up equipment through the Cross Country Center. The Ute Mountaineer supports the event and supports us by donating the proceeds of any rentals, so you don't need rentals. And then we have our athletes there as sort of chaperone guides, hosts, skiing around and having fun with the participants.
How many kids?
This year we have 286 athletes, and it's important that we say Aspen Valley Ski Club because we have a large number of participants from the Basalt, Carbondale, and Glenwood communities, including an athlete all the way from Grand Junction, Grand Mesa area.
Some notable alumni.
We do. We have two alumni currently on the U.S. ski team, Noah Hoffman and Simi Hamilton. They have been to the event. They have chaperoned at the event, and I'm sure if they were here, they would be participating.
We do sell tickets online at teamavsc.org, but you can purchase tickets at the door. But it is an absolute unique winter experience.
Susan Munchen, Events Director for AVSC, and August Teague, Nordic Program Director for AVSC. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Carolyn.
Thank you for your time, Carolyn.
This is Cross Currents on Aspen Public Radio. If you missed the show or would like to hear it again, go to our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Have a great afternoon.